You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Facebook begins facing the congressional music today. What are the rules for online research, professors? Experts say they're worried about weaponized IoT hacks, hoods exploiting Cisco switch vulnerabilities and unpatched systems, named threat groups and bugs as insider misdirection. As relations between Russia and the West worsen, some in Moscow call an end to Peter the Great's experiment. Verizon's annual data breach investigation report came out today. We'll talk to one of the report's authors. And how much do cyber criminals make? And what do they spend it on? From the CyberWire studios at Data Tribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, April 10th, 2018. As Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg appears on Capitol Hill to testify about a range of topics, mostly related to the privacy concerns surrounding his company's platform, another quasi-research organization, CubeU, is said to have scooped up users' data by inducing them to take various quizzes. CubeU is a market research firm, of course, and quizzes and surveys have long been used to collect information destined to be used for marketing. Some other research projects that have drawn adverse attention and comment, however, have been more academic in nature. We've got a question for university research review boards. Has this sort of issue surfaced in the course of human subjects research reviews? And how do research review boards handle them? It's easy to think of these boards as confined to biomedical research, but behavioral and social scientific studies are also often submitted for consideration. And how's that working out? Verizon published the 2018 version of their data breach investigation report today, one of the most anticipated and respected cybersecurity reports. Gabriel Bassett is a senior information security data scientist at Verizon and one of the authors of this year's DBIR. He joins us to share the results.
We've always seen large attacks using social actions, things like phishing or pretexting. But this year we saw concerted attempts to get tax information, the US W-2 information. And I think that's a substantial trend. It's really interesting because I like to think about the attackers as always looking for the best value proposition. They're shopping around. And when we see a new attack, I kind of see it as the attackers having found a better deal. And so when we see something like theft of tax information, W-2 theft come up, it's like the attackers have found this new, better deal. And it makes sense, right? Because now when they send a phishing email, they're not just stealing one person's data. They're stealing a whole bunch of people's. And then they can use that to go and commit tax fraud on an entire slew of people at the same time. Another trend that we saw rise substantially was ransomware. Ransomware breaches doubled again year over year. And that makes sense. There's more and more people getting in this game. And I think the reason that attackers are jumping onto this is, again, it's a good value proposition for the attacker. It's low risk. You know, it's not like physically stealing a laptop where you have to physically be near your target. You can target people all over. And then once you've targeted them, it's really easy to monetize, right? With the incorporation of cryptocurrencies, it's very easy to get paid no matter where you are in the world. It used to be that the cryptography was the hard part of the equation, but now attackers can simply purchase or lease out that portion of the attack chain. And that gives them the opportunity to make this a very easy and quick attack. The hardest part now is really the customer service, right? They have to be able to educate people who are probably otherwise unaware of how to use Bitcoin or decrypt systems on just how to use their tools.
Yeah, one of the things the report points out is that the human factor is still critical. You had some interesting statistics when it came to phishing.
Yeah, I think some of our statistics around social attacks and phishing were really interesting, especially from our non-incident data, because in addition to the 500,000 security incidents we have, and when we say incidents, we mean a compromise of confidentiality, integrity, or availability, not like an alert on your SIM. So we have 500,000 incidents, but we also analyzed 500,000,000 records of non-incident data. And that would be things like malware or phishing tests or such. 78% of people don't click a single phishing email all year, or at least phishing testing, right? Mm-hmm. And so a good portion of your company is doing a great job. On the other hand, in any given test, the median is for 4% of the people that are tested to click. And one of the things we found analyzing data is that the more times someone clicks, the more times they're likely to click in the future. And so if you have someone that clicks 5 times, they're more likely to click 6 times. If they click 10 times, they're more likely to click 11 or 12. And that means that you can go and find who the people in your organization are that are likely to click phishing emails. And that's great news, right? Because now you know where to look for the threat. And it's not because these people are in some way worse at security. There's a lot of people in our companies that have to open attachments from people that they don't know as part of their job. So if you're in the legal department and someone sends you a PDF and says it's important to your job, you have to open that. If you're in the marketing, the PR department, and someone sends you a PDF, whether or not you know the sender, you need to open that attachment. You know, it's not that they are necessarily making bad choices, but they're trying to do their job in the context of security. And so find those people and say, look, you know, do they really need a full computer? Are they, for me as a data scientist, I've got all this data science software. But, you know, they're probably using kind of the standard office applications, you know, and web browsing tools. And so they do fine with just a sandboxed operating system, a sandboxed Windows system or an iPad or a Chromebook. Would they be happy with that? And then you get the benefit of security and they get the happiness about this nice streamlined system.
When you look at this year's report, is there any good news? Is there any areas where we're gaining on the problem?
It's like two different questions there, right? Is there any good news? And are we gaining on the problem? Like, is it improving? Because there's certainly good news. Like, very small number of the breaches in our corpus are ever related to vulnerabilities. Rather than take that to mean that somehow vulnerabilities are unimportant, I like to think of that we're doing a good job of fixing vulnerabilities. And there's always going to be these kind of shotgun type attacks, you know, when a new CMS, content management system, a vulnerability comes out and there's the majority of people patch and some don't. For those of us that care about security, I think we're probably doing a good job and we need to keep up doing what we're doing when it comes to vulnerabilities. Another area of improvement is in malware. The median amount of malware on an organization's worst day in the data that we got was 7 pieces of malware on the worst day of the entire year. They got 7 pieces of malware. And so organizations don't necessarily need to sit and think, oh my gosh, you know, malware is going to just be hitting me and hitting me and hitting me. It's like, even on the worst day, it's for most companies, the median company, it's not a whole lot. Most companies only have 6 or fewer days per year where they even receive any malware. Only less than 2% of companies receive malware even half the days of the year. A lot of these problems, we have a tendency in security to look at the worst case, look at the terabit attack, look at the thousands of malware a day. But that doesn't represent the median company. The median company, for the median company, the problem is, I think, within that realm where we can handle it.
That's Gabriel Bassett from Verizon. The 2018 Data Breach Investigations Report is available on the Verizon Enterprise website. There's growing alarm over ongoing exploitation of insecure Internet of Things devices. They've been deployed for years. Experts are concerned that neither policies nor the devices themselves are ready for threats that appear poised to weaponize IoT vulnerabilities and cause kinetic effects. Others warn that industrial control systems present distinctive problems. They may have vulnerabilities that render them susceptible to destruction and to malfunctions that could compromise safety as well as operations. The vulnerabilities in Cisco switches used by apparent hacktivists to deface Russian and Iranian sites is now being widely exploited against unpatched systems by Russian hackers, mostly criminals. A high-tech bridge study suggests that the notoriety of named threat actors and well-marketed vulnerabilities is being used as misdirection by malicious insiders interested in covering their tracks. As in, hey boss, it was like that when I walked in. You think it was like that Spectre thing? We lost data? Wow, must have been that fancy bear you've been reading about. Hey boss? Russian President Putin's advisor Vladislav Surkov, Putin's Rasputin, sees 2018 as marking the end of Russia's attempts to turn westward, terminating aspirations that go back to Tsar Peter the Great. U.S. intelligence community insiders differ over whether the U.S. actually has the political will to punish Russia for misbehavior in cyberspace and elsewhere. Whether economic sanctions announced last week are hurting Moscow or not, they're being felt in London, where the city is nervous about disruption to Russian investment. Many millions have found their way into London's financial exchanges, and for that matter, real estate markets. If the oligarchs flee back to Russia, what becomes of those markets? And finally, what do cybercriminals actually do with the money they collect? It seems, according to a report by Bromium, that they spend their ill-gotten but untaxed gains on the kinds of things regular working stiffs and suits do, paying bills, buying gifts, purchasing disposable diapers, reinvesting in the business, and diversifying into stocks, bonds, and real estate. Bromium estimates that criminal big shots pull in up to $2 million a year, good CEO wages. Middle management can make up to $900 million. Entry-level hackers make around $42,000, which, come to think of it, is better than a lot of journalists with some years under their belt. But kids don't turn to crime. In the long run, it doesn't really pay. Bromium says they'll have more on this at RSA, but hey, how do they know? Who are you talking to, Bromium? And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Daniel Prince. He's a senior lecturer in cybersecurity at Lancaster University. Daniel, welcome back. We wanted to talk today about clandestine data transmission and things like network steganography, how people are sort of hiding data in plain sight. What do we need to know about this?
Well, this is an area that's really close to my heart, having sort of grown up in my research career looking at network protocols and sort of how you construct networks. And it started to occur to me that as the protocols that we're using and the systems we're using in networking are getting more and more complex, the opportunities for people to utilize that complexity to hide information is increasing. And so what I'm starting to look at now is how can we actually use things like the complexity inside the IPv6 protocol or the complexity that is enabled through software-defined networking as a mechanism to exfiltrate or send data in a clandestine way between two parties, with a view that if we can get ahead and start to think about these, we can create classifications and then mitigation approaches so that if the bad guys further down the line start to develop similar tools, we've already got approaches that we think that we can use to disrupt that activity. And so we're not starting from scratch. It's really interesting the ways in which we can hide data quite robustly within the technology. Here at Lancaster, there's been a previous piece of work that looks at this that we did and we published and that can be found on the web. But the other thing that I'm really interested in is the different rates at which we want to transmit information and the different uses. When you think about something like a command and control infrastructure for a botnet, that's not necessarily going to be very high bit rate. You just need to send small amounts of information to activate certain activities of the bots within the command and control infrastructure. But then if you want to wrap that up to maybe IP stealing and exfiltration from a network, you might need incredibly high data rates over a very short amount of time to be able to get that data out. So it's not a kind of a one-dimensional problem. You know, some techniques that are very easy to hide are very low bit rates, so you wouldn't use that for data, large volumes of data exfiltration, potentially, whereas you might need to develop high data rate techniques. So that's the broad area that I'm very interested in.
And where are we in terms of the ability to sniff out this sort of thing these days?
So we've got a lot of tools and techniques out there that the intrusion detection systems that will pick up a lot of this type of the few of these types of techniques, and certainly a lot of the older type of techniques such as hiding data within ICMP messages, for example, are easily detected and well known. But the advent of cryptographic techniques makes it harder to actually analyze the data. Where I'm interested is actually, can we develop tools and techniques which allow us to transmit information within effectively what is legitimate traffic? So even if we have the best tools and techniques out there to be able to spot this, the fact that it's legitimate traffic means it just makes it that much more harder. So one example of this could be sending messages to a range of IP addresses and underneath the control of a bad guy. And the reception of those messages to those particular IP addresses would indicate a data exchange. But the messages that they are sending are just fetching legitimate web pages. Mm. And it's the ability to be able to chain that together and multiplex that, which can be really useful. And what we're seeing is now, a lot of machine learning AI techniques to being developed to drive anomaly detection within network traffic. But it's entirely possible to use machine learning and AI to drive the other end, to do the pattern matching that is required in those complex cases of how do you align multiple IP addresses in a network communication which could send messages out of order and all these types of things to enable that data exfiltration. So it's really interesting to see the potential use of these next generation techniques such as AI and machine learning on both sides of the attacker equation.
Daniel Prince, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program, quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Puru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.